stuff.
We're celebrating now. I just want to introduce a few of our friends.
Of course, go ahead.
We have Charlie.
Charlie, how are you?
And we have Kathleen and Sally.
Hi, Kathleen.
And
hi, Sally.
And John, Kathleen, Mary, John, Margaret, Hugh. We have Molly, Grace, Gracie, Eddie, John, Kath, Beth. And you're back to the
God, we're back to full circle. Hiya, Mary, again. Huey, there's an awful lot of tea on that table. There's no stiff ones there for you.
Yeah, there's a cake here too. We're just showing the cake.
Go on. Oh, wow, good man.
22.
But I see the balloons on the wall are 88.
We have the balloons as well. You see the balloons?
They're 88, though, the balloons.
Oh,
on the cake 22.
All right. Come here. Is there a song on you, Marys? Can I take the news and I'll come back for a song?
Okay, we have a song.
Yeah, but stay there. Don't start yet. Stay there because I'm going to take the news headlines. Okay, so we've gate-crashed a party for Huey O'Donnell. He's 88 tomorrow, albeit 2022. It's whether you believe the candles or the balloons. That's the issue. Huey, a very proud Dunloe man. He's at Mahari Senior Social Club. They're having a little bit of a party, and I'm sure there's going to be a bit of card play a little later on. And we've got two-thirds of the three Marys, so it's all just coming together. So Mary Rogers and Zoom can play up with sound when there's a few people. We'll see how we get on. Take it away whenever you're ready.
Thank you very much. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Unfortunately, because there's a few people singing, it's cutting out. Miss Mary, I'm so sorry. But anyway, we could have planned this, but we didn't. It was for fun, and we got a wee sing-song. Huey, happy birthday to you, Huey.
Thank you.
We wish you... And here's to another 22 years.
I'm afraid you're wrong.
Well, I'll tell you, by the looks of it, I don't think I'm going to be too far wrong. God bless you, Huey. It's been lovely chatting to you. Thank you so much, Mary Rogers, for facilitating it. And a big hello to everyone at Mahari Senior Social Club. It's been lovely to drop in on the birthday celebrations. Have a wonderful day, everyone.
Bye.
I wish we could have heard the singing because the Marys and the rest of the crew, beautiful singers. But unfortunately, just with Zoom, we have to set something up on the other end as well so it doesn't try and filter out the sound. But hey, you got a sense of it. You even got me singing a few bars. Happy birthday, Hugh O'Donnell, 88 today. It's time for Wellness Wednesday now, and tomorrow, the 29th of February, is Rare Diseases Day. Dara Woods is a HHT sufferer and founder of HHT Ireland. And you might go, well, what's HHT? Well, isn't that part of the issue? It's probably, or it is, a rare disease, therefore it doesn't get talked about as much as other diseases. And what follows conversation, I suppose, maybe further research or investment or treatments. And I imagine that's what part of Rare Disease Day, to sort of bring these conditions to the fore with the hope that we can make advances in understanding and also in research and treatments and what have you. Dara, good morning to you. Thank you so very much for joining me today.
Good morning, Greg, and to all your listeners. Thank you very much for having us.
And we'll talk about Rare Diseases Day and its importance, and I've kind of touched on quite a bit of it now, but I want to hear about you HHT. What is your condition?
Okay, so HHT, for everyone, is hereditary hemorrhagic telangiectasia. Now, hereditary meaning genetic, hemorrhagic meaning bleeding. Telangiectasia is the one that gets everyone. And believe it or not, you have telangiectasias and I have telangiectasias. Another word for tiny blood vessels. But mine are fragile. They're hemorrhagic. They're bleeding. They rupture and cause a lot of trouble. Yours don't.
Internally or externally or both, Dara?
Internally, we have them, but we have them sitting, they're visible on the top of the skin and our lips and our gums, our faces. So actually, external and internal, most of the damage is going on inside.
So if you were to have, say, for instance, a blood vessel break in your digestive system or your lung or indeed your brain, how do you become aware of that? Because it could continue to bleed until such time as it shows itself. Is it as not as simple as that or as complex as that, I suppose, that you have to wait until it shows itself?
It does happen like that. 90% of HHT patients suffer unexplained and recurrent nosebleeds. Now, nosebleeds in themselves are fine. They're healthy. Maybe the football hits the child or an adult and you nosebleed. That's fine. But when you find you're suffering recurrent nosebleeds for no reason, they're unexplained, then you know, there might be something going on here. And then the other thing is, because it's hereditary, we take a look at the family and say, it's strange. Granny, granda, aunts, uncles, cousins, dad, mom. You know, so when there are a few people in the family suffering these unexplained and recurrent nosebleeds, then it's time to have that conversation. And so nosebleeders would be very, very lucky in one way, because that's alerting them to the issue. Mm-hmm. Others then don't suffer the nosebleeds, and they may have fragile blood vessels, as you say, bleeding internally, and until it causes a stroke or a hemorrhage, a brain hemorrhage or whatever, it's serious stuff. They have it.
Often people might feel a heaviness in the head or a headache or something like that. I mean, if that happens to you, Dara, you're thinking all different things, aren't you? It may well turn out to be just a simple headache in inverted commas, but you have to take any sign your body gives you incredibly seriously, I'd imagine.
That's right. And once there's a chance of it being HHT, once there are those signs in the family of the nosebleeds, it's time to contact the centre. We're very lucky to have a centre down in Cork in the Mercy Hospital. The national centre has been run by interventional radiologist Adrian Brady for the many, many years. And he's just recently retired. Dr. Stephen Power is filling his shoes. But when you go down there, you're incredibly lucky, because they will do full screening. They'll check the major organs, the brain, the lung, you know, whatever they feel is needed. But that's how we find out if we have involvement in our lungs or our brain. And that's what happened with my family. We realized there was an interview on the Late Late many, many years ago. I think it was 2000, and a father talked about how he found HHT was in his family, and his young daughter Grace Nolan died suddenly from a ruptured vessel in her lung. Mm-hmm. And he pulled out all the stops, went to America, met the experts, got them back to Cork to the Mercy Hospital. And that's where they set up the centre in Cork. So they were on the Late Late Show one night. And my father, who suffered from incredibly chronic nosebleeds, saw the interview, and he rang me and he said, "I think this is what we've got." He said, "We need to take steps, ring the hotline on Monday morning and see what we can do." And we did. We rang the hotline, and the advice was, take yourself and your children down, because it's genetic. So not just you, but your children have to be screened as well.
The importance interviews like this are absolutely, that's why they're so important. Because as I often say, we only have to reach that one family or that one individual, and then it's all worthwhile. Very sadly, you talked of this awareness coming through a father losing a child. Very sadly, you lost your son to attributed to HHT. And I'm really sorry for your loss, Dara. I'm sure it's never gets any easier. What do you want to say about the circumstances of your son's passing?
Well, when Paul was about 12 going into secondary school, and his sister Katie was a year behind him, we went down to Cork and we had the screening, and I was told my brain and lungs were fine. I just have the nosebleeds, which will go down into my digestive tract and cause problems as I get older. The kids were screened. They had the nosebleed issue too, but they both had the lung issue. They have telangiectasias in the lungs. Now with Katie, her We call them AVMs, but let's call them malformations in her vessels, were microscopic, and we were told they may never grow and cause any trouble at all, whereas Paul's were macro. And being macroscopic, they were causing a lot of bleeding inside we weren't even aware of. But thankfully, they were able to intervene and embolize these bleeding vessels and back. It was a day procedure, and back to school then after the weekend. And then once he's on the system, and once anybody's on the system, you're brought back so many years later. But you have to bear in mind, you're giving your child radiation for these CTs for the screening. So every 3 years, Paul would be brought back, and his new ones had formed and were badly bleeding. So he needed intervention every 3 years. Katie didn't need any at all. And Katie's now living a fabulous life in Madrid and in great form. Paul every so often would go back and have them embolized and get on with it. And this is where education comes in. We didn't know anybody else going through this at all. So we didn't know what to look out for. So Paul headed off to Paris, and Paul had graduated from DCU, went to Paris for the summer. He was going to work his way around Europe with his girlfriend. And 5 days in, he was reading a book, sitting up in the bed, reading a book, and he collapsed and died. And unfortunately, it was a pulmonary malformation that just ruptured there and then. Now, the week before, he'd had a bit of coughing and bleeding during the night, and he was kind of concerned, and he said, "This doesn't seem right." And I said, "Okay, will you go into the hospital in the morning, just get it checked?" And not knowing anything, we went into A&E in hospital in Dublin, and they'd never heard of HHT, never heard of it. But as a parent, I said, "Please do an X-ray for him. He looks fine to you now, but he wasn't fine last night." And they did an X-ray thinking I was panicking, but I didn't know at the time. An X-ray wasn't sufficient. It wasn't going to show up any bleeding AVM. It should have been a CT. Yeah. So my word, people who go through this, have this experience, and there's bleeding, they're coughing up blood. You think it's from an old nosebleed, but it may not be, and you need a CT.
Yeah.
And if I can't tell enough people that.
Of course. And this has been a theme on the programme so far this week of similar sorts of stories about knowing the information, trusting your gut or whatever it might be. Yeah. Okay. Now, obviously, there's other things can happen to us in our health over the course of our life. As a HHT sufferer, say, for instance, do you have to avoid things like aspirin or... you know, if you had another condition that would ordinarily be treated with blood thinners, that could be a complication for you and other sufferers. So in other words, it's not simply the HHT, perhaps it's how you can intervene in other medical matters.
Well, absolutely. For us, we have to stay away from all blood thinners, be it in medication or be it in our diet. We have to be so careful. So anything that will dilate our vessels, like spices, alcohol, is a vasodilator just naturally. Yeah, and we really should stay away from alcohol, but many of us don't. We enjoy a nice glass of white wine. The red berries and the red wines, for whatever reason, many of patients will experience bad bleeding. And it's the nose bleeding. It's not the the brain or the lung, but the nose tends to bleed when we drink the red wines and eat the red berries.
So, and this is not to startle, but it's to educate. But just so I understand, and so that anyone listening before they message in, you know, you will get young people that are prone to nosebleeds. And one of the interventions is, I don't know what it's called, but they'll burn the up the nose.
Cautery.
Right. Okay, excellent. Thanks for your help. Is it possible, would that be an effective treatment for the nosebleeds and mask the HHT, or that wouldn't work for HHT and people who have to go through that needn't worry?
Well, intervention like that causes more trauma in a nose. So if your nose is healthy and your vessels are strong and grand, the one-off cautery is fine, but it's not. And this is where we need to stay up to date. We need to know what's going on around the world in Europe and America, because the techniques are changing all the time. The treatments are changing. We find still here uneducated medics are taking a HHT patient in and giving the cautery, not knowing the future damage it's causing. Mm-hmm. So cautery is a no-no. Laser has been the preferred choice of action up until now. But if we look across the waters, laser is now a no-no. Again, it's causing more trauma to the surrounding mucosa. So now we are fighting for this in Ireland. Sclerotherapy is the new treatment in Europe and America. And it injects the sclerophant into the bleeding vessel itself directly. It doesn't harm the surrounding mucosa.
It's like a sealer.
And it's fine. It seems to be a great success.
Now, how many people suffer officially from HHT? And I wonder how reflective of that is the actual number. In other words, people that aren't diagnosed.
Well, 1 in 5,000 people in the world will have HHT.
Okay.
And they reckon in Ireland we're talking about 5,000 people in Ireland, roughly. But the stats are awful. 90% go undiagnosed.
Okay.
90. So, it's huge.
See, we're
it's
talking
huge.
About a rare disease, but it's rare in the fact that it's going undiagnosed. But one of those affected is a listener to the show, James. Thanks very much for texting. Does that lady with HHT take cayenne pepper? I take it daily now and has helped immensely with nosebleeds. It helps to seal up tiny bleeds internally. But, I mean, that's Jim's, James's, what's worked for them. But
and
I mean,
we've got to remember we're all so different. And exactly. One food acts differently to James than to somebody else. So we all just try and find what works for us in our diet and stick to that and rule out the ones that make us bleed.
So the reason we're talking about rare diseases is that because they're rare, it doesn't affect an awful lot of people. A cynic might say doesn't mean an awful lot of votes. It means that you have to campaign doubly hard, triply hard, quadruply hard to sort of get a change in terms of treatments and what have you, because you're not heard because there's a few of you. But that's why it's good that people come together under the umbrella of Rare Ireland, because whilst individually a lot of these conditions, diseases or whatever way they're called are rare, collectively there's an awful lot of people in our country, isn't there, Dara, affected by rare disease?
Absolutely. In the world there are 300 million, but in Ireland there are 300,000 people living with a rare disease. But there's a new campaign launched recently, 1 in 17, where 1 in 17 people in Ireland are affected by a rare disease. And I'm one of them. And it's great to have Rare Ireland bringing us all together. Like, I work a lot with HHT Ireland, specific HHT patients, but it is great to see the umbrella group of Rare Ireland there for us all. Yep. And then the next level up, Rare Diseases Ireland, which looks after all the organisations. Mm. And then another level up, HHT Europe. HHT Ireland sits around the table in Europe with all the members in Europe for HHT specifically, which helps us stay up to date with what's going on around Europe.
And also a factor too with many conditions. You look as healthy as a trout, and I'm sure you are. But, you know, the people may not be aware that you have this condition and the impact it's had on you and your family as well. People can go on Facebook and go to Rare Ireland. I think it's the best way to find out what's coming up, get information. I want to leave you with a text, and it's from the Wurisky family. And they say, hi, I'd like to say a very big thank you to Dara and everyone at HHT Ireland for the fantastic support they give to families affected by HHT and the ongoing work that they do. So it's funny life, isn't it? From your father watching something on the Late Late Show to the awful loss that's that was visited on you, Dara, from that HHT Ireland comes to pass. And yet here we are, you're reaching people in Donegal who are very grateful. It's a great testimony to you and your son as well, I think, as well.
Yeah, thanks a million. And it's just, I would just like to send a lovely hello to Dr. Parher and team in LUH. They are so incredibly interested in HHT and they're working on a personal care plan for many of the HHT patients there. And that's what's needed because it's a multidisciplinary issue. It's not just one. And where somebody might work in your lungs, you've got to be aware of what's going on in the liver and the brain and whatever. So a special word of thanks to Dr. Parher and his team in LUH.
And to reiterate the message that knowledge is power, and hopefully people have power now through this knowledge. And we have a great trust of medical professionals for very good reason, but a general practitioner, the G stands for general. Yes. And sometimes, you know, you can bring information to them as well and trust your gut, trust your instincts, trust your knowledge. Hopefully that leads to better outcomes for everyone. You're operating down the country, but I think we can claim you as a Donegaler.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, Letterkenny. Yeah, you can indeed. And I have many HHT family in Letterkenny, and they'd be. I think you've spoken to Michael McGinty, my brother, over his HHT last year. So indeed. I'm Michael's sister. Yeah. Okay. And look, if the Donegal County Council could light up the pole star tomorrow, we'd love that. We're illuminating monuments and buildings around the country where to show you care. We're lighting up lots of our buildings.
What colour is it?
All colours. Do you see the colours behind me?
I do. Colour's there.
Pick and mix. And all around the world, this is happening. And it'll be all over social media tomorrow evening. So I'm heading down to Swords Castle because I'm actually living in Swords. And I'm heading down there tomorrow with Louise O'Keefe from Rare Ireland and a gang of rare people. So rare is many, rare is proud.
All right. Best wishes to you, your daughter in Milan, and the rest of the family. Thank you very much for joining us. It's been really informative. Take care of yourself, Dara. Dara Woods there. Okay, back with more very shortly.
Business Matters, in association with the Faculty of Business at ATU Donegal. For a career in financial governance, consider the Level 9 MA in Governance and IT in Financial Services. Call 91-86206 or email donald.hannigan@atu.ie today.
Okay, so that means it is Business Matters time, and we welcome into studio Chris Ashmore, the podcast live for you right now. We'll tell you a little bit, we'll tell you much more about that a little later on. But first, let's catch up on some news. And Chris, good morning, first and foremost, of course.
Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you in studio. Okay, green light for a massive housing development. Talk to me about this.
Yeah, developer PJ McDermott has got the go-ahead from Donegal County Council. Now, it is subject to a large number of conditions, but it's a major residential development in the Glencar Scotch area of Letterkenny, and it will take a number of years. We're talking about in the region of 100 houses, 7 apartment blocks containing 28 apartments. And it's quite a complicated planning matter because there is an adjacent proposed development of 90 units. That's with Bord Pleanála. There have been some objections, mainly in relation to concerns over infrastructure. But it does look as if we are going to see quite a large development in that part of Letterkenny.
Now, commercial vacancy rates, the latest figures have been published, Chris. What do they tell us?
Yeah, you may have heard this mentioned on the news. The commercial vacancy rate in Donegal, now this is for December, which is the most recent figure, 18.2%. So roughly 1 in 5. So it's pretty high. The national average is about 14%. Ballybuffet has topped this chart for quite a while. It's of the towns that were surveyed in Donegal, it had the highest commercial vacancy rate, 29.4%. So there's a lot of vacant
property.
There is,
but these figures, I would just like to dive a little bit deeper in them because they're based on active air codes. So you could have 15 businesses in a premises in Ballybuffet, for an example, with a central delivery system.
Yes.
And you could have 14 vacant premises.
Yes, yeah.
And it doesn't actually tell you how many active businesses they are. And every time they come out, it just makes me go, look, yeah. And at what stage, too, are they purging some of these vacancies to say, right, okay, these are no longer, you know, going to be businesses into the future? Like, I don't go through Ballybuffet and see, you know, to let signs absolutely everywhere. So, as I say, I'm not saying it's not accurate. It's just the way the figures are compiled and presented.
Yeah.
How are they being updated? How are they being sort of freshened up to actually reflect the reality?
Well, as you say, it's based on the data that they have. And, you know, there always is a certain amount of vacant property anyway, mm-hmm. because there has to be for the market to turn over. By the way, just I walked up Letterkenny Lower Main Street one day recently and I counted 23 vacant pieces of property.
That is astonishing,
and that's in a small area.
Yeah. And I suppose you would hope that with this 2040 project investment, which I think has a particular focus on that area of Letterkenny, that maybe that could be reversed or convert them to residential or whatever it might be.
And as we've mentioned, there's quite a few grants out there at the moment, and the council are doing their best there.
Yeah, for sure. Sleeve League Distillery, back in the news for all the right reasons.
good news, a nice little bit of publicity for it. The independent newspaper in the UK has named its 15 best Irish whiskies for old-fashioned cocktails and sipping neat, and the best Irish whiskey overall. Well, the award went to the Donegal's Sleeve League Distillery and its Silky Irish Whiskey. So that's a nice little bit of positive PR for them.
Yeah, for sure. Go ahead, sorry.
I just want to mention today, Greg, the Donegal ETB is hosting its further education and training fair in the Radisson Hotel in Letterkenny from 7 to 9 this evening, very much geared towards school leavers and employees. Tomorrow from 10 till 2, and you can find out about all sorts of courses that are on offer. Well worth dropping in. Yeah, you know, there's a really big range of things there.
Yeah. Right, our last piece of news kind of ties in, or does fully tie in, with the podcast today. Local Enterprise Week starting on Monday, March 4th. Is that next Monday? As soon as we're crossing a month, I get very confused, especially when it's sometimes got 28 days, other times got 29, but I'm kind of confident this is next Monday.
This is next Monday. It runs all week. They do these all over the country. Now, there's so much here that really the advice is to go onto the localenterprise.ie website. You'll find the details there. We have quite a lot of household names coming up. Richard Curran, the broadcaster known for business matters himself. I think he lives in Inishowen, actually. He'll be there. That's at the start of the week. There's food coast producers showcases on. There's lots and lots of people there. And we can hear from Brenda Hegarty, Head of Enterprise with Donegal County Council.
So it's a great opportunity for those that are in business and those that might have an idea that would like to start in business to check out the wide range of events that are happening, all free of charge. And it's really a great opportunity to see what is the trends happening in business, the opportunities, but most importantly, an opportunity to network with peers and other business owners. Anybody interested, they can go to localenterprise.ie/Donegal, and the brochure is available to view, and all the links to book the events is available on that website. So it's localenterprise.ie/Donegal.
Brenda Hegarty there. And you have a second guest on the podcast, Chris.
That's right, Greg. When Malaysian woman Farah Maiden came to Ireland first, little did she think that she would end up living in Donegal and running her own business. She qualified as a doctor from Trinity College in Dublin and completed her GP training here in Donegal before she founded the Medical Skin Clinic in Donegal Town. And it was a big move for her, but one she certainly doesn't regret.
And then it all kind of came to a head for me where GP was becoming too stressful. It was, you know, I was taking things home with me. It was, you know, I wasn't sleeping right at night. It was just, it was all too much. And that coupled with my interest in skincare and skin health and what I was doing in aesthetics was basically just injectables, but I'd love to have focused more on the skin quality, skin health, which I'd never had time to do. So anyway, all in all, everything just kind of fell into place for me. I got unwell with colitis. I took some time off work and reassessed everything and decided to come into aesthetics and see how it went. And here we are.
Okay, interesting story. You can hear much more of that in the podcast, as well as the full interview with Brenda Hegarty. It's available for you live right now on our website, highlandradio.com, in the listen back section for you to stream or download. Also Spotify and iTunes, and broadcast over the weekend, Chris.
That's right, after the 6 o'clock news on Sunday.
And if anyone wants to get in contact with you,
the email address is businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Okay, Chris, thank you so much for calling in to us. That was Business Matters and the Business News with Chris Ashmore. Now, you're very welcome back. Tommy on Facebook, brilliant interview with Dara Woods. Dara and the team at HHT Ireland provide huge support to HHT families and raise awareness among HCPs and the public. Healthcare professionals, that is. Rare is sure, proud and strong. Adele says Dara does a phenomenal job. Thank you. And loads of requests in for Huey as well, which we'll get to a little later on. Do you like David James? I'm sure you do. Do you like tea and coffee? Well, here I've got something for you. Because David James is holding afternoon tea. It's tea, coffee and sweet treats. It's in St. Johnston's Resource Centre on March the 2nd between 12 noon and 3 p.m. If that wasn't enough to go and have a bit of fun, you can do so in the knowledge that you're supporting a wonderful individual and her family. That's Patrice McCrossan and her family, and that is why this event is being held. I'm sure many of you are familiar with Patrice's story. So if you want to support her and her lovely family, you can join David James for afternoon tea. It's in the St. Johnston Resource Centre between 12 noon and 3 p.m. on March the 2nd. So there's going to be tea, coffee and sweet treats. And you will not find a better cause to back there either. And at the same time, hopefully have a nice afternoon. OK, we need patience. As who was it? Was it... I can't remember who sang Patience. I do know who sang Patience, but the name won't come to me. It doesn't matter. Forget I said it. Tracy joins me on the show now. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, Greg.
Nice to speak to you. Right, now, you and well, your daughter particularly, like so many others, are for many different reasons trying to get on out on the road. And as part of that, you put up the L plates and you hope that maybe other drivers have a bit of patience or have a bit of understanding of what's going on. But what's your and your daughter's experience been, Tracy?
Yeah, well, just recently, Greg, I've added my daughter onto my car as a learner driver. She awaits her date for her test. Mm-hmm. So obviously I have the learner driver plate displayed, but I'm really disappointed in other drivers on the road because when we're out driving, when she goes to college, obviously I'm in the passenger seat with her. Cars behind, they're driving so close. They're so impatient to the extent that one day last week, a driver overtook us and started beeping at her. Mm. And I mean, she's driving to the rules of the road and she's trying to find her confidence, you know. And I'm just trying to reassure her there as well, you know, while she's driving. So really, I just thought I should say, like, I mean, we all had to learn to drive and I just would hope that other drivers would be a bit more considerate to learner drivers when they're on the road.
All we're looking for, Tracy, is just a little bit of kindness.
Exactly.
To be kind to your fellow man or woman. Is it putting her off? Like, I don't know what your daughter's like, but is it putting her off that those drives because she feels like, you know, and I think when you're younger, you think everyone's watching you to begin with, if you know what I mean. But are you find that you're having to try and say, look, that's just a few ignorant drivers. It's good for you to get out and do your practice.
Exactly. And I just say, just focus on the road ahead and let them do whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
You just, you know, keep focusing on the road ahead, you know. So, but she's determined. So, no, it's not going to put her off.
Good stuff. Okay. And it's just particularly, I think, people driving up close to you, but the beeping of the horn as well. I think any person should realise if there's a car in front of you that's got L plates on and two people in it, it's likely the driver is just trying to learn the ropes. And just a little bit of kindness and patience.
That's it, 100%, Greg.
Okay. Did you get a date for the test yet?
It should be in another few months, hopefully.
Okay, great stuff. Well, happy motoring to you and your daughter, and I wish you all the luck going forward. And it's a simple message. Just show a little bit of understanding, careness and patience. It costs absolutely nothing. It's completely free. Thanks, Tracy. Take care of yourself. All right, appreciate that. Food for thought. Now, this week on the 9 till noon show, and thanks to our friends at Fundamania Fairground coming to the Brunswick Movie Bowl in Derry, Londonderry from the 1st to the 17th of March, we're giving you the chance to win incredible family passes for a day of unlimited fun and excitement. We're giving away two passes every day this week. To be in with a chance of winning this prize today, you just have to identify the Donegal town from these three clues. And the clues are Wednesday. That's today. I shouldn't have read that out. The clues are golf links, Pollen Beach, Inishowen's Gem. Golf links, Pollen Beach, Inishowen's Gem. What town could I be talking about? Just jot that into your phone, add your name and where you're from, text or WhatsApp your answer and address to 086 60 25000. And please only enter if you or someone close to you can go and enjoy a wonderful day's entertainment on us at Fundamania Fairground. It's at the Brunswick Movie Bowl in Derry from the 1st to the 17th of March. Now, the family pass is it's an all-day family pass, so it's great. And you will, everyone of all ages, are being invited to get ready to experience the thrill of a lifetime at Fondamania, coming to the Brunswick Movie Bowl. For the brave souls out there, you can dare to take on the extreme ride or feel the adrenaline surge on the Batman, which sounds interesting. Okay, so we've got about maybe 8 minutes on the phone lines. 086 60 25 000. That's the WhatsApp. That is the text number. Right, okay. We are joined in studio by our next guest, and we welcome him back onto the programme, Liam Cannon, Counselling Director at Rafoe Diocesan Pastoral Centre. There was a time, Liam, I felt like I was speaking to you two or three times a day.
Good morning, Greg.
But we decided, I think we all decided, to give the process an opportunity and give everything a little bit of space. And we're going to talk about the process, but I also just want to, remind people of the Rafoe Diocesan Pastoral Services, what they do. So tell us that first, what they have been doing for a number of years.
Okay, well, I suppose for 30 years they've been offering a child and adolescent, or sorry, let me start again. For the last 30 years they've been offering a counselling service. It started off under the diocese with Sister Mary Donovan, and what they were offering at that stage was counselling services for adults. So I came on board with them back 13, 14 years ago, and I started to develop the services that were there. So in 2016, I launched a child and adolescent service in Letterkenny with one counsellor trained to work with children and adolescents. But anyway, very quickly, we ended up, within 4 weeks, we had 48 kids on our waiting list, so amazing. We knew it was not going to work. Yeah. So we have a team now of, in total, 26 therapists, and we deliver counselling services around the county in seven
Letterkenny,
different locations.
Dunfanagh, Heastronola, Creasla, Boncrana, Carindonagh as well. And the reason it's important to mention that, because sometimes a lot of these services, because that's where the population centre is Letterkenny based, but what pleases me about this is that there's a spread there.
Yeah.
And it grew, A, because you started it, but B, because of the demand that's out there, because
that's
this is the only service of its type. And it's not a reduction of this service, it's a growth of this service that what we need. This story then came to the fore when the rug was effectively felt like it was being pulled from under the service. You released a statement which read, "It's with profound sadness and regret that the Rafoe Diocesan Pastoral Services Board of Directors is announcing the complete cessation of its counselling services across Donegal due to a lack of public funding for a full-time director of counselling." That's part of it. That funding would have got things going, but there's other stuff that needs to happen. Very quickly after that, this became a hot topic. We've spoken to you. It's been mentioned in the Dáil. There's been questions left, right and centre. And then we kind of got to a space, Liam, whereby I think TUSLA and the HSE recognised the value of this service and started a process of looking at it, auditing it, going through the books, going through the requirements and coming up with a plan to continue.
Yeah.
Is that how you would have assessed?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's where we're currently at the moment. I'm just aware, you know, weeks have passed.
Yes.
And for me, the issue here is that when I made that announcement, mid-March was our cut-off point. And so mid-March meant that, you know, all services would end. And so we're getting into the start of March. Negotiations are ongoing. We're still in, you know, conversation with the HSE and with TUSLA. And I'll come back to that in a minute. But my main concern right now is that we have a team of you know, almost 30 people there. Mid-March was the deadline. They're working with clients as in wind-down mode. Clients are expecting to be finished in the next few weeks. And for me, I think, you know, I can't come out and say we're home and dry and safe and so let's continue. But it's affecting, I suppose, the whole team, and it's affecting at this point, you know, counsellors that are paid. Because,
well, that's what I was going to say, because these are individuals with their own responsibilities
and
their careers. they can't sit in their hands waiting, you know, on optimism at the end of the
Absolutely.
Day, because you go back to your partner and say, well, hopefully things will be done. They say, well, how are we going to pay the bills? So these are humans with everything, and the care as well. Yeah. For their clients or however the people that they work with. So in terms of listen, the bottom line is there's still a deadline here that needs to be met.
Mm-hmm.
There are three parties in this. There is the Rafoe Dyson Pastoral Centre, there's TUSLA, and then there's the HSC. So how have the negotiations gone with TUSLA in terms of, I mean, they are the Child and Family Agency, aren't they? So they've got a big interest, one would hope, in the mental well-being of young people. So what have TUSLA brought to the table at this point, if anything?
Well, actually, do you know, to be very honest with you, Greg, straight after, you know, that statement came out and after the interview with yourself and, you know, when the media caught hold of it, TUSLA responded very quickly that day, and we had a meeting the following day with TUSLA. At that meeting, you know, it was an online meeting, but at that meeting we have, you know, the local TUSLA reps here, and also we had a head of commissioning in TUSLA from Dublin, you know, on those calls as well. And I have to say, TUSLA has been exceptional.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
credit where it's due.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. And I think the benefit that TUSLA has is they know us. They use the service. We have service level agreements with them. So they're familiar with us. They were familiar with the agency, with the governance, with all the standards. And they're also, you know, very aware of the quality of the work that we have delivered.
And so what is their role, and have they committed to continuing this service?
Yeah, well, I suppose we met with both the HSE and TUSLA. Now, the HSE, on the other hand, I suppose, didn't really have any service level agreements with us in relation to the current services that we were delivering. So I suppose in one way they were getting to know who we were and what we were doing and what we were delivering. So, you know, TUSLA were very quick. They were very quickly able to say, okay, we know your governance.
So it's
we know
funding
everything.
They bring to the party, is it?
Yes.
Okay.
So they were on the basis of, you know, carrying out, you know, an overview of our services.
Stuff,
yeah, of course, and which is very important. They were able to get to that decision-making process much quicker.
So I know it's a little bit more complex than this, but suffice to say then, TUSLA are on board.
TUSLA are
so
on board, yes.
What's the foot dragging with the HSE?
Yeah, well, you know, then I suppose the HSE had to go through a complete new process for themselves.
Yes.
As in, what are we doing? What are we delivering? What about our governance? You know, all those things. What about our accounting? You know, all those things, which have to be up to date.
And what actual money would be required, not just in the interim, the appointment of a director to replace you, but also in terms of, you know, building or maintaining this long term. We get that, right? But we also do get the time frame that's involved. So what's the hold up? Can you determine what the hold up from the HSE is?
Well, I mean, the hold up from the HSE is, and I suppose it's different and different, you know, I suppose organisations do things different ways. When we had meetings with TUSLA, we had the head people.
Decision makers
at those meetings. And the difference is when you work with the HSE, you're getting, you know, local managers, which are doing their very best, but they have to gather the information and then feed it up the line and then wait for a response coming back. So it's a much slower process. So that's a bit of the hold up that we're waiting for.
Have
now.
You any white smoke from the HSC?
Well, you know, we haven't any white smoke as yet. I mean, I can't jump and say, yes, we do. But, you know, I think they have everything that they need currently. And it is on, you know, Dermot Monaghan's desk, you know, hopefully today. And really, Dermot Monaghan is the guy who makes the decision here.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I do expect not to be dragging this out for another few weeks because of the situation we find ourselves in with clients and counsellors and the service. But that it needs somebody to make a decision.
I mean, could they not give you a provisional indication so was that you can reassure your councillors that they can switch from wind down mode to the future mode? I mean, it would just be we're going to be looking favourably on this.
Mm-hmm.
Just give us a week or two. That's all it would take. You know what I mean? Well, maybe it might take a little bit more.
Yeah.
But my point is that we've a very small gap here that needs to be bridged.
Mm-hmm.
right? And it's in the gift of the HSE to do that now, I feel.
Well, no, that's it exactly. Yeah. And you know, I think, you know, TUSLA would be very happy to stand over the governance. And I think, you know, it really would come down to an agreement being reached between TUSLA mm-hmm. and the HSE together to fund this as yeah. a package.
Yeah.
Because both HSE and TUSLA benefit from yeah. it.
And I think now is a real opportune time for the likes of us, which we will, to make our inquiries to the HSE to try and get a timeline on this. Mm. But we've got five elected representatives in the county as well who yeah. have access to these departments to try and work on the centre's behalf, but actually really it's on behalf of the public that need these mm. services and the councillors. So I think we've got, like, you know, a couple of days left in this week. It would be mm. nice to get the pressure across the board back on the HSC. And you'll come back and we'll sing the praises as well. You know, we're not anti here as well. What we all want really is this service for its future to yeah. be secured and for the uncertainty to be relieved. That's it.
It's
nothing crazy.
You know, in fairness, you know, when we did sit down to look at this, you know, in fairness to both HSE and TUSLA, and again, you know, it's about them making sure for themselves that things are done properly. Yeah. What they were saying was, look, Liam, you actually need a sustainability package, not just a director.
Yeah. Because no, we get that, yeah.
We don't want this coming back.
But look, I think we kind of knew that, but yeah. it had to be articulated in a certain yeah. way. And I think, and I'm not saying it was done for any, but it had to be articulated in a way that really it is a director would keep it going. This is how much that would cost.
Yeah.
Obviously, as things progress, as this is put on a steadier footing, maybe mm-hmm. as it comes, you know, the Rafoe Diocese, and maybe if they take a step back, I think the outgoing bishop yeah. said that would, we know that's where yeah. we have to go, but this was an immediate problem, and mm-hmm. the immediate problem could have been fixed with a very small amount of funding. But yes, hey, but yeah. we don't want to get bogged in the HSE bureaucracy as well.
Yeah, no, that I mean, I think that's it. And I do think we are getting to the end of this process.
But you wouldn't have come in here to chat to me unless there was a good reason for it. It's to keep the pressure on. It's to say, come on,
yeah.
we appreciate we're making progress,
mm-hmm.
but the time is short now. Get on yeah. it. You're making that appeal. We're going to find out. And I call on any politician with any influence or the public to yeah. get in on this. Let's get this over the line. Before March, be yeah. tight. But you know what I'm on about.
I mean, I think, you know, the clients are the most important people
100%.
Here. And I think we have to be able to give them reassurance.
Sure, exactly.
Because there's a process in closing down account, you know, when you're working with somebody.
And we want to avoid that.
And we want to, avoid that coming to that.
Right, Liam,
stage.
Thank you for the heads up. Thanks for calling
Thank
in.
You very much, Greg.
We're going to make our inquiries. And as I say, I appeal to anyone with any influence to do so as well, because this is our children and our young people that we're talking about here. We'll be back with the weather. But again, thanks to Liam Cannon, Counselling Director at Rafoe Diocesan Pastoral Centre.